Hello, everybody. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author, where we talk about writing and life. Because what it takes to write the book you want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you want to lead. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres, like this month's subject of our monthly interview, Mr. Andre Debuse III. I do love to talk to Andre. He has a lot of great things to say about writing. And I sat down with him before he gave the keynote address at the PNWA's 60th Writers Conference this past summer. And the interview is up right now on Author Magazine. I just love talking to him about the difference between being a writer and being an author, about the creative process. He's a great teacher, great writer. So you can find that at authormagazine.org. It's authormagazine.org. And of course, we're funded by the Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. You can learn more about the PNWA at pnwa.org, pnwa.org. I want to begin by saying I'm sorry if you tuned in last week and were hoping to listen to me talk to AC Fuller, but unfortunately, Blog Talk Radio was on the fritz and the show could not go on. The show must go on, but it couldn't, so it didn't. But I'll have AC back on, and I'm back on now. I want to mention quickly that if you remember the PNWA, or if you just live in the Pacific Northwest, I will be teaching three classes this fall at the Pacific Northwest Writers Association Writers Cottage up in Gilman Village in Issaquah. I'll be teaching two five-week classes, a beginning memoir class and an intermediate, and a one-day workshop called Marketing for Authors Who Hate to Market, which I think is about 95% of you. So if you want to come check out any of those, go to pnwa.org and you can learn about those classes. And speaking of writers' groups, they're really good to join. You know, that it's such a lonely endeavor, writing, and it's good to know you're not alone. It's good to meet other people. And today's guest is just such a person. Christine Carbo is a debut novelist, but she is a member of the Pacific Northwest Writers Association. She is also a member of, she may be a member of more groups than this, more than I know of anyway, but she's also a member, in addition to the PNWA, the Montana Women's Writers. And she has managed to parlay these contacts, as well as use her considerable talent, moxie, imagination, stick-to-itiveness, and publish her very first book, The Wild Inside, a suspense novel that Publishers Weekly is referring to as a evocative debut. Kirk has called it chilling. Oh, these are all good things. Well, good things come to good people, and that's why I'm here to talk to Christine. Christine, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
It is my pleasure. What's that?
I'm excited to be on your show. Yeah, I've been watching Author to Author for a long time and listening, and yeah, so I'm excited to be
your
guest.
Now it's your turn. Now it's your turn, Christine.
Yay!
You see, you were writing, and you were going to workshops, and you were talking to your fellow writers about your book, and you actually sold it. But this was not your first book, was it? Was this the first book you ever wrote? Was The Wild Inside the first novel you ever wrote?
No, I had written two non-genre novels earlier in my life, in my 20s, a few decades ago. And I then kind of set writing aside, honestly, for over a decade. I went through a divorce and was teaching at a community college. In my hometown is, I live in the Flathead Valley, Kalispell, Whitefish area. And I was living in Kalispell and teaching at FVCC, which is a community college in my area, and just lots of papers to grade. And then after the divorce, I did some technical writing to try and keep making, you know, to survive, make money. And I just didn't find the time to, you know, or the energy, honestly, to be creative. So I kind of tucked it aside and said, well, maybe this thing isn't for me. One of my friends said, oh, you wait, it's going to come back knocking or calling or singing or doing something to you, but it's not going to just leave you alone. And because you're, you know, you love to write and you're just not admitting it. And I said, oh yeah, whatever. And then 10 years later, sure enough, the bug kind of caught me again. And so this time I dove into it and decided I would write what I like to read a lot, and that happens to be crime fiction. So I chose a genre this time instead of just kind of taking a stab at a slice of life situation.
Sort of slight, yeah. Well, it's tricky, you know, isn't it? One of the problems with, I think, the MFA, did you get an MFA?
I have a master's in linguistics, but not in creative writing. Yeah.
Well, one of the sort of, I think, challenges for the young writer, and I hear this a lot from genre writers, even, so you didn't get the MFA, but there is a sense that sometimes that, you know, there's sort of serious fiction and then everything else. And we know what the serious looks like, and we know what the everything else looks like, and so on.
And trust me, I was around that, even though I wasn't in that department. I was around it enough, to get that.
It's a pretty strong story that circulating amongst writers. And I think writers of genre make peace and understand themselves and understand that that's just one kind of story to be told. And it's not easy. You know, you're not the first person who's had to sort of say, you know, this is not what I'm reading, so why am I trying to write it?
Exactly. And I mean, it's not like I don't read out of that genre. I do. Nice to keep a well-balanced diet, but you know, when you think about there's those people that they just devour romances, or it's just their thing, you know, and I just happen to, you know, I can't say I've always been a crime fiction reader my entire life, but I'd have to say that Mystic River, not that many ages ago, turned me on to the whole crime fiction scene and, you know, Dennis Lehane, and certainly I think his writing is literary, you know, at least in that book. So
it is
many others. Yeah.
He's an interesting guy. He said he was one of the earliest people that I interviewed, and he said, you know, I don't owe people Mystic River 6. I owe people the best book I can write. That's all I ever owe anybody.
Right.
And I thought that was really nice advice for someone who writes. You know, I mean, in the crime genre, there is a temptation. In fact, William Gibson also talked about this, the science fiction writer, how trapped the genre writer can feel by the expectation that the readers often impose on that genre. Mm-hmm, and and can you, you know, how willing are you to push against it, and how willing are you to go your own way? I mean, you took, for instance, an interesting tact, an interesting different twist on the suspense novel. You have, well, describe your protagonist is a detective, but an unusual kind of detective, although that one that actually exists in the real world.
So my detective is a special agent, and he is a special agent that works for the Department of the Interior, and his position is called a Series 1811. Now, I mean, I took creative license with a lot of things in this book, but I'll come to that in a little bit. But this particular position, I found on the internet, and it does exist. And these guys investigate homicides, and they do it, you know, on federal land and national parks, and for the Department of the Interior, and they're called in. Now, I have yet to find an actual Series 1811 who. I mean, I have yet to like meet someone like that or talk to someone like that or find that one. So I don't know if that person is, if there's a lot of them or a few of them, I'm not sure. So I had to I did find that information and went, you know, I thought this is what I need, because I had decided I wanted to set a novel in Glacier National Park, which is close to where I live. And I love it there. And so that's what I wanted my setting to be. And I decided, you know, this is, you know, what can I do that, you know, that is just a little different? And and actually in Glacier National Park, rangers are, you know, trained law enforcement specialists who handle the crime in the park. In fact, most of the parks in the West are like that. But some of the urban parks like D.C. and in New York City and places like that, we actually have what we call park police that are under the Department of the Interior as well. And so I took creative liberties with my story and created a park police within Glacier. So I actually have rangers and park police. And I just did that because I wanted that kind of structure in my novel. But I kind of clarify that at the end, you know, in my acknowledgments page, that I did that because I didn't want to upset anybody. And I certainly didn't want to upset rangers. I just did it for the sake of conflict and the creative process. And, so my special agent is called into Glacier to investigate a pretty serious crime that And Glacier just happens to be the last place he wants to be, because when he was 14, he witnessed his father get mauled by a grizzly bear while camping there one night. So he's got lots of demons.
Yeah. It helps to give our detectives demons, doesn't it?
It sure it does. Richen them up a
little. You know, I was thinking about, as you were talking about how you had to take creative liberties a little bit to tell this story the way you wanted to tell it, I kept thinking about CSI, that ridiculously profitable and successful series. And I do not know, actually, I think we've interviewed a few crime scene people who've written books. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that show in any way reflects the life of a CSI detective. I think it's the furthest thing from it, but nobody cares. Yeah, I think it's a lot more number crunchy and not nearly so exciting. So, but nobody cares, Christine. You know why? I mean, there are going to be people who do care. And by the way, doesn't matter what you do, someone's going to be bothered by some detail that you didn't get exactly right. And they're going to tell you about it. So don't worry.
Oh, yeah. The
public will proofread you. But it's not about, it's about the story. It's about the emotional arc. It's about the change. It's about the feeling that it gives us. It's not about the little ticky tacky details. That's not going to make or break anyone's story.
No, and it really isn't. Yeah. And you know, and that's part of the art of storytelling. I think even around the campfire years ago, I don't think you were getting bogged down in every little I mean, you know.
No.
No, in fact, there might have been a little embellishment in those stories.
Oh, you think?
Make them interesting.
I am a storyteller by nature, and if I encounter a fact in one of my stories that I'm telling about my life and it doesn't really work well into the story, I feel perfectly free to either embellish it, ignore it, or exchange it with a fact from another. And in fact, I've done this
it
so often,
work.
Christine, I can't remember the real version of the one I've invented. They all just meld together in my mind.
I know, I do the same, and my son, he's 16, and he gets this look when I'm telling something, and he'll get this look like, so is this like something you've read? Is this fact? Is this, or is this mom's story time? like I'm on to you. You can't
it's
just
all
tell me anything
mom's
without
story
me.
Time. Well, such is the life of being raised by a writer. He's going to just have to deal with it. So, explain this to me. So you explained being turned on by Mystic River and turned on to crime fiction. Why? Mm-hmm. So teach me why crime fiction is awesome. Why? What is it that makes it so interesting to Christine Carbo?
Okay, well, I think, you know, all good writing, all good stories, no matter what genre, have an element of suspense in the sense that you have to want to keep turning pages. And, you know, it can be just because the writing's beautiful, but most often it's because you want to find out what happened, whether there's been a murder or not. You know, you want to find out what happened. And certainly I love all books that keep me going like that. It doesn't have to necessarily be crime fiction. But with crime fiction, I think that is infused or exaggerated just a touch more because there's been some kind of a crime and you're going to want to find out who did it. And so that alone kind of infuses the page turning, so to speak, automatically. It's like an automatically. And so there's that. That's just kind of the surface level given. But I think for me, you know, I don't know. I've thought about it, and it's kind of like, why? You know, sometimes I'm a little embarrassed. Like people are like, well, why do you like to read that stuff? Like, really?
What do you say to them?
And so that's the part that I have to think. And it's like, well, you know, there's a bit of escape, I suppose. But there's a bit of realizing that a lot of the crime fiction there, even though there is a lot of crime in the world and there are a lot of, you know, killings and murders and that exists, and there is a lot of death and awfulness. The thing about crime fiction is it almost separates itself out from that a little bit, and it doesn't. It feels different. It feels a little bit like escape. It feels a little bit like you're not really completely tapping into reality the way it really is, you know, with crime.
What is the difference? All right, what's the difference between reality as it deals with death and death as it deals with it? Because it always seems to me the crime fiction, they're trying to look as realistically as possible, you know, within the framework
and
of a compelling narrative.
I think we're trying to do that. But do you ever read it? Do you ever go, okay, I feel safe within this book, even though I know.
Yes, and I'll tell you why I know why.
For some reason, I feel safe here.
Because I know how it's going to end. I don't know how it's going to end,
For the most part,
my guy is going to. Yeah, it's not going to have an ambiguous. Well, that's the way it goes. It's probably not going to end like Chinatown, which I liked actually quite a bit when I saw it. But
when something different happens. But for the most part, yeah.
The killer is going to get caught.
And for sometimes that gets a little old. Like sometimes it's like, okay, I've had enough. I need to read something else because this formula is irritating, to some degree. Sometimes, as much as I love the genre, it's like that's why you need a well balanced diet. I mean, like you can't just eat pizza forever. And I'm not comparing crime fiction to pizza, but I'm just saying that within that suspense, that heightened suspense, there's also this sense of getting a glimpse of danger and crime as it exists in the world, but at the same time as it doesn't really exist. And so I think that's where you feel a little bit safe.
I think that there is this level of truth to suspense novels and crime novels. It goes like this, which is that in the end, good, what we call good, does always win out. I know people look around, you can point to all the wretchedness I think what we call good, which is love, which is what we call justice, actually is our resting place. And I think that there is inherent truth to the fact that killing somebody will come and get you eventually. It may not be when the guy in the trench coat shows up and solves it, but one way or the other, it will come back and get you. You must pay for everything you steal, even if it's a paperclip. I think that there is a truth to that that goes beyond just it's a good read. I think that it's inherent in the nature of humanity. So there you go. There's a philosophical
truth. You're right about that. Yeah. That's why it has such a huge audience. Crime fiction.
Well, it's compelling immediately. As soon as someone's dead, you want to know. I was talking to Elizabeth George. I love Elizabeth George, and she's a wonderful woman, very interesting to talk to about writing and crime novels. I always felt that real good crime fiction, suspense fiction, are never whodunit, but whydunit. Why?
Exactly.
Who cares who did it, really? You want to know why they did it. What drove someone to do this thing? That's the juicy question.
That is. And I think in that discovering of the why, there's also the why is the protagonist, if your protagonist happens to be the person trying to solve it. Why are they so either bothered or interested in it? Or so it's like that story. But I think that's for me the most interesting thing about crime fiction is not necessarily always why the criminal does it, but what is ticking with the person involved in the case, or you know, several persons or one person
or
whoever.
I'm so glad you said that. Listeners, if you're listening and if you like to write crime fiction, listen to what Christine just said. It was very true that I mentioned Chinatown, but there was something driving the Jack Nicholson character in that about the sense of power and him not liking and not liking how much liberties the wealthy were taking. And so I think it's absolutely true. I mean, except for series,
the stronger that gets, the more leeway you even have in the ending, which is why you could, that could be done.
That's right.
Chinatown and some other books.
Because you can have resolution within the protagonist, even if the quote antagonist, the villain, doesn't get caught. You can still have resolution within the protagonist, can't you?
Yeah, to some degree or yeah. not, but it has to be clear then that they're flawed or yeah.
I think that's true. I think it's very true. Yes, you have now when you start, for instance, you started this book, what was the beginning part? Were you most interested in the setting, in the protagonist, that kind of protagonist, or did you have the sort of crime in mind first?
No, I did not have the crime in mind. I had setting in mind first and foremost, just because when I think about the kind of crime fiction, let's talk about Elizabeth George or, you know, these kind of haunting or interesting or atmospheric or dynamic or even bustling places where crime fiction takes place, you know, big cities or, yeah. The atmospheric thing in the rainy London town or outskirts of London or Glasgow or Dublin and so when you read these stories, they're just, that's so magical, some of the settings that they take place in. And so that was one of the things to me that drew me in. And at first, I have to be honest, at first I thought, well, I've lived like in Cowtown, like Montana. Where's the sexy dynamic element that I'm looking for? And I didn't feel like I could just, write a story set in New Orleans or LA or someplace that, even though I've been there, someplace that I didn't really know, the kind of write what you know thing, I guess. Felt like I needed to, and at the time, I'd never written a crime fiction novel before either. So I was new on all fronts. And so I thought, if I'm going to do this, I need to at least understand my setting. It needs to be where I am and where I live and what I love. And then it dawned on me, I have this national park where like over a million, there's about a million, maybe less than a million people that live in Montana. Period. And yet we probably have over that visiting park every summer coming through. And, interestingly enough, on the way to Glacier, there's this canyon it's a lot of the way they make money is through that tourism during the summer. Cause that's when the tourism time is, through concessions and selling huckleberries and little stores where people are driving through and stopping. But there's not a lot of economic opportunity otherwise in some of these small towns. And so where that exists, there tends to be crime. And so when I started to look at it, I really thought, I've got meth right outside of the park, I've got these things.
Oh,
going
yay,
on,
meth.
Yeah. All right. It's not like this is a crime free area by any means.
Right.
And yet we've got this beautiful, gorgeous park where millions of people are coming in, not just from the United States, but from all over the world. And sure. So to me, it was like, okay, this is where I need to. And then I spent a lot of time in Glacier, and there is a very haunting quality to Glacier. And, and I thought, again, embellishing that, using that, and even not embellishing it at times, it's just sometimes, writing accurately about the place, it can be, a pretty wild place. It's a great place. And so I thought, I have it, I have this. And then it was like, but now I need character, and I need a character that has what we just discussed earlier.
Yeah.
Something that, that makes them interesting.
You start with something and just fills itself in. It's a curious process. I find equally interesting the moment you mentioned casually, but I never tire of hearing these stories, which is you said, this friend of mine, and she said, are you going to write again? And I said, I don't know. And then you said, but I did get bit by the bug. So, but that we that word gets tossed around. I got bit by the bug, but it's actually kind of a beautiful moment when that thing wakes up again. So what does that mean, you were bit by the bug? What was that? What was the difference between Christine when she wasn't bitten and Christine that she was? What happened?
Well, some of the things in my life changed. I quit doing the technical writing, which was, and no offense to you technical writers out there, it was just very monotonous for me personally. And after spending hours and hours on the computer writing or, going over technical documents, the last thing that you want to do is go get back on your keyboard to start typing away, or at least for me at the time. And I was a single mom at the time. And I'm not saying that you can't still tuck creative writing around those edges as many, many, many people do. And I still have a crazy busy life. But I definitely, some things change. For one, I was having a lot of shoulder and neck issues while I was on, my ergonomics probably weren't so great, and using the mouse all the time with creative, or not with, with the technical writing, as I was moving same chunks of information around, and always was using the mouse almost more than the keyboard. And somebody said, well, you should go do Pilates because that's really great, you know, for your back and your neck and blah, blah, blah. And I did. And so then some people knew I was a teacher at the college. And so they were like, well, you sub my class. And I'm like, well, I did English. I'm an English teacher. They're like, it doesn't matter. Just, you're good at being, you can be in front of people. Just sub my class. And I go, okay. And so I did. And then pretty soon I was like, well, I'm teaching anyway. I should get certified. And one thing led to another. Anyway, long story. I opened a Pilates studio. And that, once I kind of got away from it, from the grading papers and the, you know, and all in the technical writing and everything, and I was doing something entirely different realm. It's interesting how that kind of freed me back up to go back to, to the creative.
That makes sense. It makes sense because I remember when I worked in restaurants to support our family while I was writing my books, and I wasn't selling them, and it was very difficult. And I knew I had to get out of the restaurants and find some other way to make money, but I really wasn't sure how I was going to do that. But one of the things I thought was, if the restaurant work was taking up a certain amount of time and space, time, first of all, just physically and also just mentally, and I knew that when that was no longer there, something would come in to fill it. It just all, it's almost like nature abhors a vacuum. And it doesn't surprise me at all that once you got away from the keyboard, and by the way, the one time I did technical writing, my knee started hurting. You can believe it.
Yeah.
I don't think it had anything to do with ergonomics.
Yeah.
So it doesn't surprise me that once
energy or trapped creativity, who knows?
Oh, absolutely. It's, I go through all kinds of weird things with my body that have, that one day it's bothering me, the next it doesn't. But it doesn't surprise me at all that once you freed up that time, and you weren't spending that it was just there sort of waiting for you. And also you were in your body.
Right.
Now you're back in your body.
And honestly, really I wouldn't even call it freeing up the time because I was still, you know, by then I was remarried and, you know, and had two stepdaughters and still my son. And, but yeah, freeing up that mental compartment a little bit, I think was key. And, because I mean, I guess we're always crazy busy, right?
we could be. You don't have to be, but you can be.
And so, but I want to go back to your question about, so what does that look like? And I'm curious what it looks like for you. But I'll start by saying, you know, it's like you start having these little twinges of thought, like what if that happened, or what if this happened, or even if you don't, even though if you don't even have an idea, it's like this urge. Like, I want to write something. I don't have a stupid idea. I need an idea.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have it. And then you start, like, your brain's just churning all the time. What would be an idea? What would work? What would be an idea? What would work? Because I really just feel like I can do that. Or you read a great book again, not the Mystic River this time, but maybe something else. And it's like, I want to do that, or I can do that, or I think I can do that, or maybe I can't do that, but I want to at least try. And so then that's kind of what it looked like for me, the beginning of that.
You know, I'm so glad you said that, because I had this woman say to me once, I was teaching some class, and she said, my problem, she said, is I'm not creative. She said, look, I've never created anything. I'm not creative. And I thought, you know, I have created a ton of things. I created little symphonies. I wrote plays and poems and books, and I've created a ton of stuff. And that's because that's what I've done in my life. But when I think of my creativity, when I think of me as a creative person, I never think of the things I do. I think instead of what you just described, which for me is my curiosity, that little itch within me that is interested in something for reasons only I can understand. That to me is my creativity. And everything I make is just a consequence of it.
Right. And I think there's also a drive beyond curiosity. Mm-hmm. I mean, for you probably too. I mean, there's this like urge, like this is just something like a calling almost, like this is just something I feel like
I need to do. Why are you here on the planet, Christine? You're not here just to make babies and die, you know, and make some fertilizer. You're here to do something, you know, you're here to express something. I'm sorry. We're not just we're not just trying to survive. It just, there's more right. to it than that. I'm convinced. Well, yes. Christine, this has been a delight. I'm so happy for you that you got your first book published, and I hope there are many, thank many, many much. More to come after that.
I do too. I'm currently just finishing up revisions for book number two, and they're due on the 8th of September, and
that's
and
awesome.
That's coming out in May, and so I'm excited. Wow. It's fun to be on this journey.
That
sure.
is just awesome. Well, just keep, listen, the best marketing for a writer, particularly writers who are writing crime fiction in the genres, your best piece of marketing is to write the next book and the next book and the next book. That is your avenue.
Just keep plugging along.
Just keep going. Yeah. And they will build like a snowball rolling down a hill.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's so true. And I think along with that whole process is just this whole element of, it's this interesting binary kind of operation for me of insecurity and believing in yourself at the same time. It's like the insecurity I've learned to appreciate because it's like, okay, without my insecurities, I would not probably have gotten this done because it's my insecurities that, like, you're the lady that said, I'm not creative. It's like, you know, you say that and then you're like, well, how can I prove that I really am? Or how do I get creative, or how do other people do this? And then so it's like those insecurities, like, well, I don't know how to do it, but I got to find out how other people do it. And then you start like reading and learning, and it's that insecurity that keeps you searching, you know, learning, trying to do better, keeps you sincere too, you know, because you're insecure. But then it's like at some point you have to also believe in yourself, and you have to start getting a little That's confidence right. in order to keep plugging along, like you said, keep rolling down that hill. So.
Well, I'm glad you did roll down that hill, and I look forward to seeing you next one, Christine. Best
Thank
of
you.
Luck.
Thank you so much for having me. Yeah, I really
Oh, my pleasure.
It. Have a great
All right,
day.
Take it okay. easy. You too. Bye-bye. Oh, you know, insecurity, she said. I suppose it is, but it's really humility. Humility, ladies and gentlemen. You got to have it if you want this to work. All right, well, listen, next week I will be back. And I will be talking to somebody. Who will I be talking to? I will be talking to, Karen Finifrock, the writer and slam poet, the novelist and slam poet. Can't wait to talk to Karen. Until then, go out and do something you love. What's the worst that'll happen?